My room? Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. Are you okay?
Marjorie didn't answer. I asked, if she's going to her room, can I watch The Incredibles? Ken, you can watch it with me.
Barry walked into the room, holding his hands out like a cop directing traffic.
You guys are doing great here. Marjorie, if you're feeling okay, can you please just give us a few more minutes together, okay? It'd be a huge help.
Her lips moved, but no words came out. I had no idea what she would do. So I was most surprised when she silently acquiesced and sat on the floor. Barry said,
"All right."
He clapped his hands once.
"How about you guys talk a little bit about tomorrow?"
Mom asked, "What do you want us to say?"
"Whatever you want. Are you guys nervous, afraid, excited, relieved? Tomorrow is why we're all doing this, right? Do you guys have anything you want to say to one another or to the cameras, to anybody watching? Just give us something, anything."
Ken gently grabbed Barry's arm, told him to relax, and pulled him back into the foyer. Mom said, "Okay, okay. Here's what I think. Fuck you, Barry. Did I say that clear enough? Do you need me to repeat it for the mics?" Her face flushed a bright red, lips pulled back over gritted teeth in a snarl's snarl. Barry said,
"No need. I think we got that one, thank you."
Dad sat with his head in his hands, all slumped forward, like someone had pulled his plug. He said,
"Tomorrow. Tomorrow is God's day. It always is."
When he picked up his head, his eyes were closed. He whispered a prayer under his breath. Mom said, "Well, I sure hope tomorrow is Marjorie's day. God can have the rest of them." Marjorie stood up, shut the TV off, and walked over to Mom and sat on her lap. Marjorie was the same height as Mom and fit over her perfectly, like she was drawn on top of Mom with tracing paper. Mom put her arms around Marjorie's waist. Marjorie said,
"I want to tell you guys what it feels like when I'm not me. Can I tell you guys about it?"
Mom said, "Yes, of course you can."
Marjorie was quiet, and I didn't think she was going to tell us anything, but then she started in. "Last night, I got up in the middle of the night to go pee. Then I opened the little window next to the sink because all of a sudden I felt like I was burning up, that I was 1,000 degrees, and I crawled up onto the windowsill. It took a really long time to get up there and squeeze my body into the frame. I almost fell out. I tried to scream for help, but I couldn't move my mouth, and I couldn't breathe, and everything in me just started leaking away, running down, like my volume button being turned down slowly. I knew I was dying, that that was what dying felt like. And the worst part was that the terrible, horrible dying feeling was going to last forever. I'd never fully run out, so the feeling would never stop. And that's it. I crawled out of the window and went back to my room, put on my headphones and got in bed, but that dying feeling was still with me."
"That sounds just awful, Marjorie," Mom said, her voice stuck in quicksand.
Marjorie said, "Look, I need to ask you guys a favor. Will you be in the room with me tomorrow when it all happens? I want you to be there."
She sounded scared and like she might start crying. It was quiet enough in the room that I could hear the hum of the cameras. Mom said, "Of course we'll be there. Your father and I love you and we'll always be there for you." Dad mumbled something about God loving her too. She said,
"Thank you, but Mary has to be there too."
Dad said,
"I don't know if that's for the best. Your mom and I were talking about sending her to Auntie Erin's for the night, right, Sarah?"
That was the first time I'd heard of the Auntie Erin plan. Marjorie said, "No, you can't do that. That won't work. If Mary isn't there..." She paused and repeated herself. "If Mary isn't there, someone will get hurt. Hurt bad. And that person will feel what I felt last night and feel it forever and ever and ever."
"What do you mean?"
I mean that someone in the room, could be anyone, I don't know who, but I know. I just know the exorcism won't work, and then someone will get hurt bad. Unless Mary is there.
Dad stood up and took two steps toward Marjorie so that he loomed over her like a great tree.
Is this the demon talking?
No, it's me talking.
How do you know this will happen?
Like I've said before, I just know these things. All these ideas and images I get, they're born in my head.
Dad rubbed hard at his face, like he was trying to take it off. He looked up at the ceiling and said,
I wish Father Wanderley was here. He's told me repeatedly that I can't trust what she says because the demon will lie.
Then he looked down at Marjorie.
I'm sorry, honey, but I don't know what to believe.
Marjorie said, Father Wanderley and Barry and the rest of them wanted Mary in the room last time, right? So what's the difference? I'm sure they'll want her in there again anyway. Makes for good TV, yeah?
Dad said,
That's not why they wanted Mary there.
Marjorie laughed. Oh, so they did want her there? I was just guessing at that. Why'd they want her there, huh? Just for Mary's love and support, right?
Marjorie struggled out of Mom's hug and off her lap. She walked behind Mom's chair, draped herself in the lacy white window curtain, then spun around, cocooning herself. It was like the night she was in the blanket in the cardboard house, except I could still see her face's outline, if not her features, through the curtain.
Dad said,
Marjorie, don't do that. Get out of there.
Mom didn't move. She stayed seated, and when she talked, it was like she was talking to the middle of the room. I know we've already talked with Father Wanderley and Barry about tomorrow, but I really don't care what they say or what they want anymore. I don't want Mary there for the actual exorcism. I don't want her to see what you have to go through. I don't want her to see what you've been made to go through. I don't want her to see you like that, Marjorie. I worry about what this is doing to Mary as much as I worry about what it's doing to you.
Marjorie, still wrapped in the curtain, said, This is going to help me, Mom, and it will help our family. You'll see. But only if Mary is there. If she isn't, I will not cooperate. I will not go where you'll want me to go, and I will not do what you want me to do. I will cover my ears and my eyes when Father Wanderley reads his rite. I will take all my clothes off so you can't film me. If that doesn't work, I'll destroy the cameras. Things will get bad for everyone.
Marjorie?
Dad was getting louder. Marjorie leaned up against the wall next to the window. If you tie me to a bed, I will yell and scream and swear and say such blasphemous things over everything Father Wanderley says so the audio footage will be essentially useless. And then someone will get hurt.
Dad started roughly unwrapping Marjorie from the curtain, yelling at the foul demon that was inside her. Mom started yelling too, telling him to stop it, that he was hurting her, and she grabbed his arm and tried to yank him away. He growled at her and ripped his arm out of her grasp. Mom fought harder and hit and scratched at his arms. Barry and Ken went over and tried to break it all up. I remember it all happening, as cliché as it sounds, in slow motion. My life is a piece of videotape to be slowed down and coolly dissected. Or maybe it's like my memory is a computer with a processing speed too slow for all of the information, and the only way to keep from crashing, to parse any of it, is to artificially slow everything down. The four yelling adults pushed and pulled one another, and in the middle of it all, the curtain swirled and danced around Marjorie like oxygen-drunk flames. She smiled, showing her teeth through the thin lace curtain before it was pulled away from her face and ripped off the window frame entirely. She yelled, "Listen to me! I don't know if I can, but I'm trying to save you all, too. Mary will help me." I'd been saying the whole time that I wanted to be there for the exorcism, but no one was listening to me. I finally reached my breaking point and started crying and screaming for everyone to stop. And then I was just screaming as loudly and as high-pitched as I could, and I couldn't stop. The adults finally heard me and stopped what they were doing. I was crying so hard I couldn't catch my breath. Mom screamed at me to stop and told me that I was okay, and Dad was crying too and saying he was sorry. Marjorie sat down on the floor, expressionless, picked up a corner of the curtain and put it into her mouth. Barry and Ken retreated off camera, back into the foyer. Mom picked me up and rushed me into the bathroom and sat me on the toilet with my head down. She soaked a face cloth in cold water and put it on the back of my neck. Somewhere out in the living room, Dad prayed, saying the words so fast and without any pauses for ends of sentences, ends of anything, I couldn't hear any individual words. It just all flowed together with the cold water dripping down the back of my neck. Chapter 21. On the morning of the exorcism, I stayed home from school. I hadn't known that was going to happen. No one had told me I wasn't going. No one asked if I wanted to stay home. No one woke me up in time to go, even if I'd wanted to. When I woke up, it was after 9 o'clock. I was nervous at first, like I'd done something wrong. Mom was still asleep in the bed next to me. She didn't stir as I quietly crawled out of bed, dressed in sweatpants and a sweatshirt, and sneaked away. Marjorie was asleep in her room, on her side, facing away from the doorway. I peeked in across the hall and Dad wasn't in his bedroom. I went into the sunroom, peeled back the black cloth covering the windows so I could see out front. His car was gone. I went downstairs to eat breakfast and found Ken sitting at the kitchen table by himself with coffee, a laptop, and his notebook. He said,
"Good morning, Mary."
"Hi."
"Need any help? Want me to make you something?"
"No." I acted like I was mad at him, though I wasn't really sure why I'd be mad at him. I made cereal, spilling some of the milk in the process, but I cleaned it up myself. I sat across from Ken and crunched away on the fruity O's.
"Staying home from school today?"
"Yes. It's the big day, you know."
"I know it is. You be careful, okay?"
"Will you be here tomorrow, after?"
"I'm not sure. Depends."
"Depends on what?"
"On how today goes. I'm not really sure what the plan is. Barry is meeting with the production company and network reps as we speak. I'm going to guess that we'll be here tomorrow, but you never know. Maybe we'll leave tomorrow, but then come back in a few weeks to do some follow-up interviews and stuff."
"But you're the writer, right? You can write yourself into staying a few more days."
Ken said,
"I wish writers had that power."
I finished breakfast and poured myself a glass of orange juice. I drank, watching Ken read something on his laptop and make notes. I said,
"I'm going outside to play soccer."
I didn't ask him if he wanted to come too. He didn't ask if I wanted him to join me. He packed up his stuff while I tied my sneakers. He said,
"It's really cold out. I don't think that sweatshirt will be warm enough."
I shrugged and went outside with my ball anyway. He was right. It was freezing out. My ball instantly became a hard rock that wasn't fun to kick. Plus, the leaves were damp and frosted, and they stuck to my ball. Mom and Dad still hadn't raked the leaves out back yet. Mom had said they were too busy. Dad had said it looked cinematic and made for dramatic autumn in New England-type shots. We'd all rolled our eyes at him when he said that, even the camera person filming us. I didn't want to go back inside and admit to Ken he was right that it was too cold out. I stayed outside, cutting paths through the leaves until my cheeks were chapped and my toes were wet, unfeeling nubs jammed into my sneakers. While I was playing soccer in my own self-imposed gulag, there was a chorus of voices steadily increasing in volume coming from out front. I was sure it was the protesters, who had become so ubiquitous that they were like wallpaper you didn't notice until you actively decided to stare at it and follow the pattern. I was bored with ice soccer, so I decided to go out front and stare at that wallpaper. Dad must have just pulled into the driveway, because his car was askew, still running, and his driver's side door was open. He yelled and pointed at the protesters. Two policemen stood in front of him and appeared to be physically holding Dad back. Beached in the street in front of our house was an idling white minibus. A new group of protesters ringed the vehicle. They were offset and separate from the usual crowd, who were clearly unhappy with this new group. The new group's signs were brightly colored in fluorescent yellows and greens, looking, ironically enough, like peace and love tie-dye shirts on poster boards. But the text was thick and ugly and black. The signs read, "God hates fags. You're going to hell. God hates fag Catholic priests. God hates you. God hates Marjorie Barrett." I don't think I knew what the word fag meant at the time. I felt queasy because I knew I was seeing something that I wasn't supposed to see. The new protesters were mostly men, but there were some women, and one little girl close to my age, cheerily holding up the "You're going to hell" sign. I wanted to yell at them, tell them that Marjorie was my sister and that no one hated her. I couldn't understand why anyone would hate her just because, like Mom said, she wasn't well. I wasn't brave enough to yell at the scary new protesters, and I ran toward the front door. There was such an explosion of angry shouts from the crowd, I thought they saw me running for the door and were now coming after me. I stumbled up the brick stairs, twisting and landing butt first on the stoop. I expected to see the new protesters pouring over the lawn toward me with their signs waving, teeth bared, hands outstretched. But everyone was shouting like crazy because of Dad. Dad worked his way through the ring of new protesters and tore up all the Marjorie signs he could reach. I cheered him on. "Go, Dad!" The police jogged into the crowd, but were still more than a few steps behind Dad. One protester who'd held his sign behind his back in an attempt to protect it said something to Dad. I couldn't hear him, but I saw his mouth moving, and I saw the big, "I dare you" smile after. Dad lost it. He spit in the other man's face, and he started yelling, swearing, and throwing wild punches and kicks. The other man didn't fight back at all, but instead ducked and covered. The circle of protesters quickly cleared, and it seemed like everyone had their smartphones out and pointed at the scene. They laughed, cheered, and egged on the very one-sided fight. The policemen finally caught up to Dad and wrapped themselves around his chest and back. Dad was out of control, yelling and thrashing, smashing the back of his head into the policeman's chest, trying to break free. I stopped cheering him on, and a cry of, "Leave my dad alone!" died in my throat. I was scared, and I wanted the police to hold him, calm him down, to make him stop. The two policemen held on and eventually brought him to the ground. I didn't know what to do. There wasn't anything I could do. I opened the front door, Ken ran past me, and I ran past him and up the stairs. Marjorie was awake and sitting on the edge of her bed. I didn't stop at her door. I kept running down the hallway. Marjorie shouted behind me, "I told you there's something really wrong with Dad. Maybe he's the one who's possessed, yeah?" I ran to my room and hid under the covers next to Mom, who was still asleep. Mom had to go to the police station to bail out Dad. I'd overheard her shouting on the phone, using that phrase. I knew enough to know she meant something other than Dad was in a sinking boat. I spent the afternoon watching TV with Ken. My usual shows weren't on, so we were mainly stuck watching cartoons I'd already seen before. We didn't say much to each other. I asked Ken if the new protesters were still out there. He said yes. Actually, he said, "Yes, those awful people are still out there." I dozed off and on, listening for Mom's car, watching the front door. Marjorie was upstairs by herself. I heard her roaming around the second floor, haunting our rooms, opening and shutting doors. I wondered if she'd looked outside, seen the new protesters, and read their signs about her. Mom and Dad finally got back around 6 p.m. Mom had phoned ahead, telling us they'd be home with dinner, so Marjorie and I were sitting at the kitchen table waiting for them when they arrived. As they walked in the door, Marjorie whispered to me, telling me again that Dad was the one who was possessed. My parents weren't speaking to each other. They said quick hellos to us. I tried not to look at them directly, although I was reasonably sure that neither of them knew that I'd seen Dad punching the protester. I also didn't want to look at Dad because I was afraid he'd look different, changed. Mom carried a large brown bag of Chinese food. They set the table with paper plates, and we picked what we wanted to eat out of the white cardboard boxes. Dad said grace. It lasted longer than what had become the usual, and he alternated between near tears and gritted teeth anger. We politely listened and waited for him to finish. Tony and Jen and their cameras buzzed into the room like the flies on the wall they'd become. Marjorie's plate had more color to it than mine, but she didn't eat much. I ate a mound of white rice and chicken fingers with lots of duck sauce. I so associate the tangy, sweet taste of duck sauce with that night that as an adult, I avoid eating Chinese food. It's funny that I can and have watched all the episodes from our show without ever feeling like I'm reliving the trauma, but duck sauce on white rice will send me over the edge and will instantly bring back all the anxiety and fear of exorcism night. When we finished eating, Mom asked if we wanted our fortune cookies. I tore into mine, breaking it into glass-like shards. The fortune was some life-affirming aphorism I no longer remember. I do remember the "Learn to Speak Chinese" lesson printed on the back of the slip of paper, though. Shui means water. No one else wanted their cookie, so I ate a second one, but I made sure to crumple up the fortune without reading it, because Marjorie had told me once that getting two fortunes would bring bad luck. Dad cleared the table and stacked the white cardboard containers of leftovers in the fridge. With his back to us, he announced that Father Wanderley would be arriving soon to perform the exorcism, and that we should get ready. I didn't know what to do to get ready, so I went to the small half-bath off the kitchen and washed my sticky hands. When I came out, Mom and Dad were sitting at the table with their heads down. I went over to Marjorie and gave her a hug around the neck, from behind, so if she wanted, she could have stood up and carried me around like her backpack. I whispered directly into her ear, "You'll do great, Marjorie." She said, "You're going to do great too, Monkey." Mom got up and said, "Come on, Marjorie, I'll go upstairs and wait with you." Dad stood too, looking confused, and said,
"Oh, okay. Yeah, good idea. Mary and I will talk with Father Wanderley when he gets here, and then we'll..."
He stopped abruptly and never finished. I didn't want either of them to leave. I wanted her to stay down in the kitchen with me. I said, "No, let's all stay down here together." I didn't let go of her neck. Marjorie shook her head no, and her hair feather-dusted my face. She said, "I want to go back to my room. I don't feel very well."
"Can I go upstairs with them too?"
Dad said,
"No. You need to stay down here."
He sat back down. He put his hands on the table, then on his lap, then back on the table. Those big hands didn't know what to do. I tightened my grip on Marjorie and said,
"I don't want to."
Mom looked directly at Dad and shouted, "Mary can come upstairs with us if she wants." And Tony, the cameraman, flinched and bumped a shoulder in the doorway.
"Hey, take it easy. I'm just saying she should stay down here with me. I mean, we didn't get a chance to fully prep her for tonight, right? Like we wanted."
He paused and then said,
"Look,"
as though Mom had responded or interrupted him, neither of which happened.
"I want to talk to her again about what's going to happen, and I want Father Wanderley's help."
She said, "You don't know what's going to happen."
"We need to pray."
"There'll be plenty of that later. She wants to be with her sister. Let her be with her sister."
"Right, because them being together has worked out so well before."
I'll be there too.
This is fucking crazy. We agreed to have another prep meeting this afternoon.
Yeah, well, something else happened this afternoon, didn't it? Maybe we should have had another prep meeting in your goddamn holding cell.
Dad stood up quickly and sent the kitchen chair crashing to the floor. He looked backward and extended a hand to the chair, like he didn't mean it. He said,
Jen, Tony. Hey, can you leave us alone, please? Seriously, stop taping. Just give us a few seconds.
I couldn't see Marjorie's face. She was still wrapped in my arms. I felt her breathing. It was slow and even. My eyes blurred with tears, and I ducked back down and said,
Stop yelling at each other. I'll just stay down here,
into the back of her head. Mom shushed me and said,
Oh, sure, now Mr. Confessional Interview wants to get rid of the cameras.
I didn't know where Ken and Barry were, or if they were watching. I called out silently to Ken in my head, wanting him to show up and calm Dad down, calm everyone down. The two camera persons didn't respond to Dad, and they didn't turn their cameras away either. Dad said,
Mary and I are staying down here, and we're going to pray and talk about how she can protect herself.
Dad grew louder, more manic, and in my memory, he grew in size, too. I whispered as lightly as I could,
Go, please, Marjorie. Just stand up and go. Go away from them. I'll hang on. Can we go?
I felt so helpless, and I wanted to be away from Mom and Dad forever. She whispered back to me,
Later, I promise.
Mom said, She and I will talk, and I'll be there to protect Mary.
Come on, Sarah. Can't you admit just for once that you're in over your head?
I'm not the one who suddenly thinks he has the power to magically pray everything better.
What can you do to protect Mary? Seriously, tell me. What can you do that you haven't already tried? I mean, aren't you worried about Mary's soul, too?
I'm worried about everything. I'm worried about what all of this is doing to Mary. And if you're so worried about her soul, tell Father Wanderley to come up with a spell to protect it. Come on, girls. Now.
This isn't going to work if we don't believe.
Jesus, John, really? You sound like a Disney movie. Don't worry, I'll believe when I have to.
Carry me, Marjorie,
I said. I was too afraid to let go. Mom yelled at me,
Mary, will you just get off your sister? You heard her say she wasn't feeling good.
Mom gave me a hurried explanation of what to expect, of what might happen. I didn't listen to a word. I paced anxiously around Marjorie's room. Mom said,
Mary, please, you're making me nuts.
Sorry.
I went over and sat at Marjorie's work desk. I hated her wooden chair. It was so uncomfortable, and it made my legs fall asleep if I sat in it for too long, and then I'd get yelled at for having to stomp out the pins and needles. Marjorie was in bed, lying on her side, facing her closed door. Mom sat on the bed beside her and stroked her hair. Mom seemed ready to break down into tears, but said in her calmest voice, Do you want to talk, Marjorie? Do you want me to put a stop to this? I will. You just tell me. I'll cancel everything. Marjorie said,
A little late for that now, isn't it, Mom?
No, it isn't. I don't know. It's like a few months ago when your dad first brought up the idea, I was this totally different person. I had to be, because I don't understand what that other woman was thinking. I don't understand how she could have thought that this was a good idea. And I'm so goddamn mad at her. Why didn't she say no when... The doorbell rang. Two-tone, one high note, followed by a lower note. Mom was still rambling on, and Marjorie said,
It's okay, Mom. Stop it. This is what I want now. It's going to help, I promise.
In my memory, heavy and hurried footfalls coming up the stairs immediately followed the ringing of the doorbell. Then there were the whispers in the hallway and knocks on Marjorie's bedroom door.
Hello? May we come in?
I shouted,
No, go away.
I wanted everyone to just leave me, Mom, and Marjorie alone. Let us stay in her room like that forever.
Yes, come in, Mom said.
It was Barry with Jen and Tony, the camera persons, and a small army of technicians clustered behind them in the hallway. Barry consulted a clipboard he was holding, looked up, and said,
Hi, just a few things. Just wanted to double-check that Marjorie was still okay with the exorcism taking place here in her bedroom like we agreed to earlier.
Marjorie said, Yes.
Great. You're a trooper, kid.
He then clumsily explained that they had some last-minute setup work to do. Mom swore and said something about them having had all day to do this. Barry's legion poured into the room with more lighting and sound equipment. One guy had white candles and an ornate brass candelabrum in his arms. Another had a large pewter crucifix, and another carried in small statues of the Virgin Mary. Barry shouted at the setup crew that it all had to be ready 5 minutes ago. Mom said, Gee, should we step out for a minute or something? After one guy almost hit her in the head with a boom mic stand.
No, you don't have to. Oh, but wait, yeah, if you want, that's fine too. Maybe?
Marjorie said, I think I'm going to be sick. And Mom shouted at everyone to get out of the way, to clear a path, and she ushered Marjorie out into the bathroom. I followed them out, but Mom shut the bathroom door on me. I waited in the hallway outside the door and listened to Marjorie coughing. When it quieted down and I heard the faucet running, I wandered over past Marjorie's busy room and to the railing that overlooked the stairs. I sat on the floor and rested my face between two balusters. I used to do that on Christmas mornings when I was up before everyone else and would just stare down at the bottom of the stairs in the front foyer, which was lit up in the soft white glow of the Christmas tree lights in the living room. Dad and Father Wanderley were downstairs in the living room. I heard them talking. The front foyer was lit in a harsh white light from someone's camera lamp, or maybe they'd set up a spotlight for a pre-exorcism interview. Barry led his technicians out of Marjorie's room, and they filed downstairs. Barry said,
We're ready for you upstairs, Father.
Mom and Marjorie were still in the bathroom. I stayed sitting and with my head resting against the spindles. Tony, the cameraman, stood adjacent to me, leaned some of his weight on the railing, and pointed a camera down at the first floor. I told him not to lean on the railing because it could break. Dad always used to say that to me. Father Wanderley was the first up the stairs. He wore a billowy white tunic over a black robe. He looked so much bigger, so much more substantial than he did in his usual black shirt and black pants. The tunic had lace decoration on the hem down by his ankles and near the collar, but was otherwise plain. His hands were lost inside the tunic's giant sleeves. He wore a long purple stole draped over the back of his neck, and it hung down below his knees. There was another priest, the same one who had come to our house that day I was first introduced to Father Wanderley, Father Gavin, the short, young one with the beady eyes and lots of forehead sweat. He was similarly dressed in a white tunic and purple stole, and he carried Father Wanderley's red leather-bound book and this thing called an aspergillum, which is a long wand with a metal ball at the end that held holy water. Dad came up the stairs next. He walked with his hands folded and his head down. The top of his head, which I normally didn't see from such a favorable vantage, had a new bald spot like a crop circle. With everything else going on, I was still shocked by how much hair he had lost. Father Wanderley walked right up to me and extended a hand. He said, Please, stand with me, brave little Meredith. Adults understood the sacred power of names. I had to take his hand, and I had to stand with him, even though I wanted to stay with my face pressed against the balustrade. Dad asked what I was doing out here. I shrugged and told him I was sorry. When I said it, I meant that I was sorry for not choosing to stay with him, even if I would have gone upstairs with Marjorie and Mom if given the same choice all over again. Dad didn't look me in the eyes, but stared at some empty space just over my head. He asked where Mom and Marjorie were. I told him that they were in the bathroom. Dad walked over and knocked on the door.
"Marjorie?
Sarah?
Are you okay? Father Wanderley is here and ready to get started."
"Mom, we'll meet you in Marjorie's room. Give us a few more minutes." Dad sighed, lifted his arms, and let them fall bonelessly to his sides. He said,
"Shouldn't Sarah hear the instructions again, Father? I feel like she's putting this all on me when we both had decided that this was best."
Father Wanderley said, "It'll be all right, John. You are a pillar of strength. You are a fine Christian man."
"No, I'm not. I failed today. I failed tonight. I'm not a good..."
"Nonsense. You stumbled, and you got back up, and you are again standing alongside Christ." He grabbed Dad's hand and mine again. "What I need from you both, and what Marjorie needs from you both, is to believe in the power of God's love." Dad whispered a thank you at Father Wanderley. It lacked conviction, though, and sounded like I used to whenever I was reminded or prodded to say please. The bathroom door opened, and Marjorie peeked around the corner, a hide-and-seek player trying not to get caught. Her face and hair were damp. Mom filled the doorway behind her. Marjorie asked,
"Should I go in the room first?"
She held a hand to her stomach.
"I feel funny. There's something not right."
Father Wanderley said, "Sarah, please help Marjorie to her bed. We'll be in right behind you." Marjorie's bedroom door was closed. The hallway was filled with cameras and priests and people. It was too much for me, so I just stared hard at the door, at the cracks in the wood, and followed them up toward the ceiling and down to the floor, until Mom finally passed in front of me like an eclipse and opened the door. Chapter 22. Tony the cameraman pushed through the rest of us to walk into Marjorie's room next. Jen was already inside. Mom stood in the middle of the room and called out to those of us still in the hallway. "It's freezing in here. Is the window open? You didn't tell me the window was going to be open." Father Wanderley said they needed it to be on the cooler side in the room. He didn't offer any explanation. He dropped my hand and Dad's hand and walked in next. The rest of us followed. Marjorie's room wasn't her room anymore. Lighting lamps, boom mics, and candle stands lined the perimeter. Her desk had been draped with a white cloth and housed candles and religious idols and statuettes. Crucifixes hung on each wall, with the largest one made from pewter and hanging on the white plaster spot on the wall where Marjorie had punched holes. My eyes were drawn to that crucifix and the deeply etched agony on Jesus' face. Mom was right. It was freezing in the room. I tucked my chin, hugged my chest, and fought off waves of shivers. Low murmurs of discussion rumbled through the room. Barry was there. I hadn't seen him come in, and he talked about lighting and angles with Jen and Tony. Dad hung back toward the door, standing ramrod straight, head bowed, hands folded in front of him, his knuckles gone white. Marjorie sat on the bed, the comforter and sheets were turned down, and stared off to nowhere. Mom stood over her, and she suddenly got louder than everyone else in the room. "I know we talked about this, but do we really have to tie her down, John?" Leather straps had been fastened to the posts of Marjorie's bed. They looked like black tongues. Father Wanderley said,
"Yes, as we discussed, the restraints are necessary to keep Marjorie safe, to keep her from accidentally hurting herself or anyone else in the room."
Everyone in the room stood in a half circle and watched Marjorie lie down on the bed. She voluntarily stretched her arms out over her head toward the bedposts and said,
"Mom, you tie them. Go ahead, do it."
Mom slowly went down to one knee in front of the bed and buckled the straps around Marjorie's wrists and ankles. Mom whispered something to Marjorie that I couldn't hear. Marjorie just watched the ceiling. When she was done, Mom kissed her hand and pressed it to Marjorie's forehead. Marjorie exhaled, and it was cold enough that I could see her breath. Mom was crying. She slowly backed away and stood next to me. I asked, "Mom, what did you say to her?" Mom bent down and said, "She'll be all right, Mary." I nodded my head, even though my sister didn't look like she'd be all right. She was dressed in a gray hoodie and black swishy pants, her arms and legs akimbo, strapped to the bed. Her legs and feet twitched, fast like blinks, and her lips wormed around, making words without making sounds. I tried to read them. Wind gusts rattled the old, open windows in their frames. Candles burned and wax sizzled. The walls, the statues of Mary on the desk, and Marjorie's face glowed weirdly orange in the candlelight. Everyone in the room settled in and got quiet. I stood between my parents. Each had a hand on one of my shoulders. Their hands were cold and heavy. Father Wanderley stepped into the middle of the room and said simply, "Let us begin the sacred rite." He slowly walked to the bed and made the sign of the cross over Marjorie's body. His wavering hand hovered only 6 inches or so above her, like he was tracing her outline in the air. Marjorie said, "He's pretending to cut me into 4 pieces. It hurts. Divide and conquer. He's going to do the same to all of you." She sounded tired, uninterested, like she was in a hurry to get this, whatever this was, over with. Father Wanderley repeated the sign of the cross over himself. Then he did the same to everyone else in the room, including the camera persons. When he got to me, he bent down and waved his right hand up, down, left, right, in front of my face. I followed his hand with my eyes like it was one of the vision tests I routinely failed without my glasses. Upon finishing, the other priest gave him the aspergillum, and Father Wanderley sprinkled holy water on us all. I ducked, and a lone, icy drop spotted the top of my head, and it felt like the tip of a finger. He sprinkled Marjorie up and down with the water, waving his wand madly, striking out at an invisible assailant. He doused Marjorie with so much water, sizable wet spots ink-blotted her gray hoodie. Marjorie didn't move or say anything. She only blinked when the drop splashed her face. Father Wanderley turned to Mom, Dad, and me, and held out his hands, palms turned up. "To all present." Marjorie stared at the ceiling and said, "For all those playing along at home, he's going to kneel next to my bed and recite the Litany of Saints. This is going to be the really boring part. He has to say the name of, like, every saint ever." Father Wanderley repeated his instructions. "To all present, please respond with, 'Lord, have mercy.'" Marjorie said, "But later, when he invokes the name of a saint, you're supposed to say, 'Pray for us,' after each one. Mary, if you don't do this correctly, you're going to get a demon inside you, one that has pointy scales and sharp horns, and then you'll be in hell, like me." Mom and Dad breathed out fast, air hissing through their clenched teeth. Marjorie said, "In my hell, my parents are tea kettles." She giggled, but it was forced. I could tell. She was scared. I don't know if she was afraid because she didn't know what was going to happen, or if she was afraid of what she'd already decided would happen. Even now, I'm not sure. I think it was a little of both. Father Wanderley said, "Barretts, you must ignore what she says. Remind yourself that it isn't the real Marjorie saying such awful things." "It's me. It has always been me." Father Wanderley knelt by Marjorie's bed, and his purple stole and tunic pooled around his knees, giving the illusion that he was disappearing, melting into his vestments. He opened his red leather-bound book, and he said, "Lord, have mercy." Dad and Father Gavin were the only ones in the room who gave the response.
"Lord, have mercy."
Father Wanderley, "Christ, have mercy." I tried to respond like I was supposed to, but I did so incorrectly. I said, "Lord," when I was supposed to say, "Christ." It happened again with the next response when I got it totally wrong when they said, "Christ, graciously hear us." Mom squeezed my shoulder. She wasn't participating. She whispered in my ear that I could just respond in my head if I wanted to. I shook my head no, because if I didn't do my part, this wouldn't work, and we'd all be stuck in Marjorie's hell forever. Marjorie had told me she was faking and doing it all on purpose, and I believed her, but just in case she wasn't faking, just in case there really was a demon inside her, I was going to do what Father Wanderley said. Even if I didn't believe in him or his God, I wanted to believe that what he was going to say would make her better, would turn her back into who she used to be. Ultimately, it didn't matter what I believed, because Marjorie wanted me to be there for a reason. I didn't know what that reason was, and until I did, until I knew what I had to do, I would do what was expected. I'd play the part of the scared little sister that she and everyone else wanted me to play.
"Have mercy on us,"
Marjorie said, "and here comes the litany." Father Wanderley,
"Holy Mary, pray for us."
Father Gavin echoed with, "Pray for us." Father Wanderley waited until the rest of us said the same. Mom whispered it too. Marjorie said, "He'll say 50 saints' names. Try counting along, Mary." Father Wanderley read the litany. I was supposed to say, "Pray for us," after each name, and I did, but I also couldn't help but counting the saints. I used my fingers to help, curling each one into a balled fist, then starting over again with an open hand. She had the correct number. Father Wanderley said,
"From all evil deliver us, O Lord,"
and he waited. Marjorie said, "Now the response is, deliver us, O Lord. Come on now, try and keep up. Didn't anyone else do their reading homework?"
"From all sin,
deliver us, O Lord." Father Wanderley continued to pray, like he was reading a grocery list, and we responded in kind. Marjorie started talking over Father Wanderley. He tried to project his voice louder, but she matched him in frequency and decibel. Their voices were synchronized sound waves, and Father Gavin and my parents were off in their response timing, as though they couldn't distinguish between who was saying what. I focused on Marjorie. I watched her speak, and in my memory, she was as clear to me as if she were speaking inside my head. She said, "He'll ask to deliver us from an unprovided death, and deliver us from earthquakes and storms and plague and famine and war. Those prayers have never worked, have never stopped those things from happening. They won't now, and they never will. And I don't see what any of these prayers have to do with helping me. These prayers are designed for you, Mary, to make you think his God controls all things, especially you." At some point, the response changed to, "We beg you to hear us." Dad was nearly shouting. Father Wanderley stood up shakily, and he was breathing heavily, frozen breath billowing from his mouth like he was a smokestack. The younger Father Gavin rushed to his side. Father Wanderley said, "I'm all right. Just my trick knee acting up." He gathered himself and recited the Lord's Prayer and read Psalm 54.
"Turn back the evil upon my foes. In your faithfulness destroy them."
Upon finishing the psalm, he launched straight into a solo prayer that for the first time directly addressed the evil spirit inside Marjorie. The prayer seemed to go on forever, and no one else spoke, including Marjorie. In it, he referred to a God who was merciful and forgiving, and he said something about an apostate tyrant, a noonday devil destroying God's vineyard. At the end of the prayer, he finally said Marjorie's name, and he called her a servant of God. Everyone said, "Amen." The younger priest handed Father Wanderley a white cloth. He wiped his face with it. Marjorie suddenly became animated, like a switch had been flipped. She squirmed and pulled on her restraints. Her lips were blue and her teeth chattered. Father Wanderley addressed the demon directly. "I command you, unclean spirit." Marjorie said, "Wait, please wait, it's me. I thought I could take the cold, but I can't. I'm freezing. Please, Father, I'm doing the best I can, but I'm soaked with holy water and I'm right next to the window. The freezing cold air is blowing directly on me. My demonly powers don't keep me warm, you know. I'm joking. Seriously, though, can someone just shut the windows or pull up the blanket?"
Mom stepped forward and Dad grabbed her arm. "No, not unless Father Wanderley says it's okay.
Let go of me."
Marjorie spoke at the same time.
"Dad, please, I'm so cold."
Father Wanderley stopped reading. He said,
"Family members cannot come into contact with her now that we've started the rite, particularly when I'm directly addressing the demon. It's not safe. Her pleading could be a trick."
Marjorie said,
"Yes, I've made my lips turn blue, willed goosebumps to appear on my skin, and I'm fake shivering. Just like all those women the church had drowned and burned as witches were trying to trick the faithful with their screams."
Mom said,
"I'm pulling up the blanket."
Father Wanderley said, "Please," and held up a hand to stop her.
"Let us do it. We'll pull up the blanket, okay?"
He asked the younger priest if he would pull up the blanket. Father Gavin stepped forward as Mom retreated back to me. I was freezing, too. I wanted a blanket, but I wouldn't ask for one. He hesitated at the foot of the bed.
"Should I pull up everything, or just the comforter?"
Father Wanderley didn't really answer him. He just said,
"Quickly, now, please."
Father Gavin wrestled with the turned-down sheets, leaving them behind and crumpled at the foot of the bed, finally choosing to pull the puffy white comforter slowly over Marjorie. He was quite nervous and avoided any contact, both eye and physical, with her. She watched him hard enough to burn a hole into him. She said,
"Please tuck it up as close to my chin as possible and get as much of my arms under it as you can. Thank you so much."
Father Gavin did as he was asked and carefully molded the thick blanket around as much of her outstretched arms as he could without covering her face.
"That's so much better."
Marjorie shivered and her body shook under the sheet. Father Gavin skittered away from the bed, a rabbit sprinting through an open field. Father Wanderley started in again, commanding the unclean spirit to name itself and obey him. Marjorie said,
"Really? We need to go through this again? Fine. I know what you want me to be. I can be Azazel, the serpent, the fallen demon."
Father Wanderley soldiered on. He put his hands on Marjorie's forehead and prayed for her healing. Marjorie said,
"I'm exaggerating my cosmic standing a little bit. How about if I'm just plain old Azazel, as described in the Hebrew Bible? I'm only the scapegoat, the outcast sent into the desert."
Marjorie had recovered. Her voice was hers again, calm, matter-of-fact, tinged with that unmistakable undercurrent of teen dismissal and disdain. Father Wanderley read the first of three gospel lessons.
"Maybe we should spice it up. Because Ken is such a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft, I can be Azathoth, the demon sultan, the nucleus of infinity.
No one dares speak my name out loud, and I feast in the impenetrably dark chambers beyond time and space. Rawr! She thrashed and wiggled about in her restraints, and the carefully tucked comforter slid down, away from her arms and away from her chin and pooled around her midsection. I am the dead dreamer, older than sin, older than humanity. I am the shadow below everything. I am the beautiful thing that awaits us all. Hey, Mary, that reminds me. I miss your books. You don't bring me your books anymore. I miss writing and making up stories for you. Do you miss my stories? I wanted to answer her, though I knew I wasn't supposed to interact with her in any way. She looked over at me, and her face flashed disappointment when I didn't say anything. So I nodded my head, just slightly, so only she could see it. Father Wanderley did not engage her in discussion, but continued to read his Gospels. He droned on without any change in pitch or timbre. I couldn't tell if he was listening to her or not. His head and neck glistened with sweat.
I'm cold again. Can you pull up the blanket again? Sorry, I'll try not to move around so much.
Father Gavin didn't wait for permission. He swooped in and pulled up the comforter, this time wrapping and tucking the corners under her arms and shoulders. Fingers snapped somewhere behind me, and then Jen, the camera woman, crept up in front of Mom, Dad, and me toward the headboard for a hard close-up. Father Wanderley crossed himself and made the sign of the cross over Marjorie again, slow and deliberate. He picked up one corner of his purple stole and draped it across Marjorie's neck. She strained to look down at it. He placed his other hand on her forehead and gently pushed her head back into the pillow. Marjorie smiled and said,
"Your hand is warm. Make sure you say the rest in accents filled with confidence and faith, like it says in your book."
Father Wanderley nearly shouted his prayers, and Dad eagerly shouted back the responses. I didn't turn around, but he must have been on his knees because he was shouting in my ears. I covered them with hands and fingers that hurt, they were so cold. I wanted to leave that room, that house, and I had a brief runaway fantasy where I ran away to California, which I'd never been to where all the Bigfoots were. And I'd disappear into the woods and live alone, become a rumor, an occasional blurred sighting. Father Wanderley filled himself up and shouted, "Let us pray!" Then, shaking, voice breaking, he asked that he would be granted help against the unclean spirit now tormenting this creature of God's. He traced the sign of the cross on her brow three times. Marjorie said,
"I'm not a creature. I'm Marjorie, a 14-year-old girl, scared of everything, who doesn't know why she hears voices that tell her confusing things. And I try to be good, and I try not to listen to them."
She paused in places where there weren't supposed to be pauses, and she stumbled over the words like she'd forgotten her lines she hadn't spent enough time memorizing. Marjorie was suddenly unconvincing. Unlike when Father Wanderley and Dr. Navidson had previously interviewed her, it didn't feel like she was in danger, and it didn't feel like she was a danger to us. An emboldened Father Wanderley said that Marjorie was caught up in the fearsome threats of man's ancient enemy, sworn foe of our race, who befuddles and stupefies the human mind, throws it into terror, overwhelms it with fear and panic. Marjorie asked,
"Are you scared and confused like I am?"
Her voice was as small as I'd ever heard it.
"I think everyone is secretly like me."
Father Wanderley asked that this servant be protected in mind and body. He folded down the blanket and traced the cross on Marjorie's chest, over her heart.
"What are you doing? Why is he touching me there?
Marjorie twitched and arched her back against the restraints, trying to avoid the priest's touch. The rest of the blanket slumped off the side of the bed. Jen retreated a few steps back from the headboard toward the newly plastered wall with its heavy pewter crucifix. Jesus peeked out over her shoulder, and she kept her camera pointed at Marjorie like it was a gun.